Welcome back to the Birthlink podcast. We're doing a video. I'm going to do a video and I have my notes. So let's get into this introduction. First, we have Dr. Charisse Fascio and Abigail Hart. Today, they're both board certified obstetricians and from Louisiana, and they are the doctors behind the OB Hospitalist. Initially conceived to unite OB hospitalists and help others in their field cope with the challenges of being in healthcare, family, and juggling modern day challenges. Their audience has expanded to include nurses, midwives, sonographers, and anyone else passionate about delivering quality and meaningful women's healthcare. They're also big into evidence-based biohacking and longevity tips for high-achieving women, though we don't really get into this topic on this episode. I did go into their LinkedIn and look to find out more information, and I found a quiz on that. So they touched on hormonal health, and I love that. I'm very interested in that. So I'm going to have them back to discuss that. But it was the first time that I've ever had an OB of any sort on this podcast. And just from following them on Instagram and reaching out, and then the conversations that I had with them leading up to this discussion, I knew that it was going to be really insightful. I wanted to keep the focus on educating you on exactly what a hospitalist is, because if you're planning to birth in a hospital, and most are, it's a good idea to not just know what it is, what one is, but to find out if your facility even has one. So don't hesitate once you're in there to meet them ahead of time if you have that luxury, you know, unless you're going in like 10 centimeters and you're like, oh, hi, who are you? If you have a little time and you're not in excruciating pain, ask them if they have a hospitalist and if you can meet them. I was just really curious to find out their perspectives on like the current hospital system in the US and what they see for the future. And of course, their opinions on patients who come in with birth plans, right? It's also the first time that I decided to present this video on YouTube, because even though it appears to be like a rough hair day for me on this interview, because I had to go through on editing, whatever, they're gorgeous as ever. And I realized that for some listeners, it may be nice to show their facial expressions, like how, I don't know, some people just like that more, and I wanted to give it a shot. So any of my past guests, just reach out if you like a video and I can make that happen. So for myself, I've decided to take one final 3-month contract in labor and delivery. I know it's crazy. It's a crazy thought. It is for me too, but it's, you know, it's hard to sever that tie. I love labor and delivery. What can I do? I can only hope that this experience is going to allow me to advocate and practice safely, respecting autonomy. But, you know, I really do feel like this is going to be it for me. So I'm going in there with a sense of like, closure, I guess. Though I'm in compliance part right now, which is a lot of online tests and stuff, which not enjoying that part. But we'll see. It's going to be 3 months from November to December, or January, November, December, January. Yeah, till January. So it is what it is. Those 12-hour shifts are brutal, like on my life and anyone. I don't know how anyone does it for years and years and years. I have known nurses that have been night shift for like 20 years. I think they just adjust. But man, I can do it for 3 months though. It'll be fine. You know, this is a time period where I'm like, for the agency, I'm onboarding and training nurses to join My Friends a Nurse. And I want to save the funds that I have for the agency in the bank to pay them, not myself. So if I can make some extra to invest in the agency, then that is even more of a reason for me to do this right now. I have virtual clients still, and I have openings to take more that are delivering in April and later. So though I do keep the size small in order to provide more like the level of support that they desire. So if you're interested, reach out to me, Colette at myfriendsandnurse.com, or DM me at myfriendsandnurse on Instagram. Starting in mid-December, right before the holidays, we're going to start taking concierge clients through their providers. So anyone in the Los Angeles and Ventura areas that are thinking of a concierge doctor, Or maybe you're higher risk and looking for a concierge nurse to provide care in the home instead of the hospital, please reach out for more information. I can give you a list of the services that we'll be providing and the packages that we offer. We're going to hard launch around May 2026, so you'll be hearing a lot more on that as the time gets closer. So, all right, that's my update. Let's get started with Dr. Fascio and Dr. Hart.
Welcome to the Birthling Podcast, presented by My Friend's a Nurse. I'm your host, Colette McCulliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of two beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the show, you two. This is the first time I'm having two people on, so I think this is going to be fantastic. How are you guys?
We're doing Thanks, well. We're great. It's our off day, hashtag off day.
I worked last night.
Don't get many of those.
And we are so happy to be here.
Awesome. I know. First, I really want to just get into, because I was just about to jump into your schedule and everything, but let's start with explaining what a OB hospitalist is and what got you there on your path. And there's two of you, so just both take turns and tell me your stories and explain what a hospitalist is.
Okay, so in a nutshell and in a way that I feel most people could understand, an OB hospitalist is normally a board-certified OBGYN who does shift work in the hospital. They could be 12 or 24 hours, but we are not a office-based practice. So we are here for the people who don't have an OBGYN, people whose doctors can't make it to the delivery. We see the emergencies in the ER that are obstetric or gynecologic related. So I would say most of our deliveries are done. It's patients whose physicians maybe don't have delivering privileges at a certain hospital or just could not come in. So we're usually the first line or the first face that a patient sees when they're about to deliver. So it could be very disalarming, but I do find a large part of our job is how to get on the same level as our patients. And we have like 5 seconds to do that most of the time. And I think it takes practice. I mean, I don't think I was able to do that my first year, but as the years have gone on, it's how to read the room, how to read people, how to read their families, and get a good feel. It's definitely, for me, a collaborative style of care. And I feel like at the end of the day, everybody's happy. Even if our birthing experience didn't go along with the plan because of an emergency or whatever have you, or any situation that could come up, the end result's great. And if I get thanked at the end of the day, great. But if not, you know, if my patient's smiling when they're telling me bye, that's good enough for me.
That's great. And I think also to add that an OB hospitalist is somebody that keeps, you know, the hospital, the patients like safe. We're there, we're not leaving. You know, a lot of times old school hospitals, the OB would just go home and sleep. But, you know, we're there to respond to emergencies because anything can happen in obstetrics and gynecology. And so we're there for all aspects. You know, sometimes I say we are OB doctors, we're ER doctors, and we're also trauma surgeons because a lot of times gynecologic emergencies can be very traumatic. And so we're here to support women in all aspects in the hospital.
I have to And add, having gone through that stuff ourselves, we've been on the other side. So I feel like we get it and we've been in those people's shoes before. So not only do we sympathize, we empathize.
Totally. And I have to add educators as well, because the hospitalists that I had the pleasure of working with were so fantastic. And they don't, if it's, you know, a bit of a slow night, they don't always want to just sit alone in the room unless they have like a side hustle they're doing. They love to come out
and hang out with the nurses and speak about birth and maybe past cases. We do a lot of debriefing together, a lot of education to the nurses and back and forth. And that's not something that we get to, that attendings with their own practices get to do. They don't really get to build these amazing relationships with the nurses. So they really feel like a nice part of the team, which I really love. So
yeah, I agree.
We like it too. Yeah.
We love it. We love working with the nurses. In fact, I probably get asked once a week about why I do hospitalist work and do I miss office work. And my top two reasons for being an OB hospitalist, number one, I like working in the hospital. But number two is always, I like working with my nurses. That's always the second thing to come out. I'm like, that's my social hour.
It really is.
It's true. The best food is at night on labor and delivery.
No, they're like, and the amount of cookies that we get. And then I'm like, I know why you're speaking out to the nurses station.
Yes.
That's amazing. So, and then I want to know, did you always have an idea that you wanted to do this specific position, or did it lead up to it? What was your path to get here?
So I would venture to say in the most educated response that I can think of is the OB hospitalist movement at the time of our training was not as mainstream as it is now. I had hospitalists at my training hospital, but that was kind of an anomaly. A lot of hospitals didn't have that. And it's become more and more popular. And as our maternity care deserts are expanding, the use of an OB hospitalist at a hospital is arguably the only way to go at this point, just for patient safety.
I think to answer your question, for me, it was motherhood that led me to choose this, right? I always loved OB. I loved GYN. I was willing to give up office-based practice. And secretly, I do like emergencies. I like the craziness that happens in the hospital. But I think motherhood and choosing this career path, just so that I can be a mother and home with my kids. I mean, we've got to spend a lot of days together this summer, and I'm forever grateful for the time that we'll never get back.
Like, because I know the schedule of a doctor that is even in a group or that's on call or that is a private practice and he's the only one, that is exhausting. You just really wear yourselves out.
And it's so stressful.
Stressful. It's a lot on your plate. You're the only one. You're getting all the messages. Whereas you're not, as a hospitalist, you get a schedule. And maybe it's a big schedule. Maybe it's like a 24-hour shift sometimes, maybe longer. But at least you know. And then you know you clock out and you go home and you can kind of separate. You're not like constantly thinking of this one client and or this patient or you know, maybe you're thinking of what happened or how you can fix it next time. But it's not like you carry that with you, which is a big reason why I became a nurse. Because instead of a doctor, instead of, you know, because I was like, I just want to clock out and then disassociate just a little bit.
So yeah, and that's part of work-life balance too. I know as OB hospitals, I'd say maybe the first year of me doing this was figuring out what's my rhythm, what do I put in my hospital bag, you know, and that's easy, kind of got in the groove with that. And then it was actually able to come home and not have to be by my phone all the time. But what I've also found about myself is my brain has to be well rested. My body has to be tuned in order for me to take the best care of my patients. Like my memory's better. I work faster. So I'm all, you know, can work-life balance truly be obtained for some people? Maybe not, but the closer you can get to that, to where you can do your job optimally, that's what I'm always trying to review and perfect.
Right. And to be clear, the hospitalist is my understanding. It's not like they're new doctors. You're not like, mm-mm. These are well-seasoned physicians. These are expert obstetricians, attendings that have your back. And they're there. They're not in a rush. They don't have a dinner to go to and get the speed up, which I have seen. So it's kind of nice to know that someone's there that will go at your own pace as long as everything is safe. And those are
very good points, because some of our patients and listeners don't know our backgrounds. when I remember interviewing for some OB hospitalist positions, at the time, there was a minimum 5-year requirement of OBGYN experience. I would say when I first started, maybe I saw more well-seasoned physicians, like the salt and pepper hair, like they had been out well over 20 years, and now they were starting to trim down their practice and doing OB hospitalist as supplemental work. But now what I'm seeing is more people maybe in their late 30s, mid 40s, people that maybe look like us a little bit more, where we still love what we do, we're in the thick of things. And that's the other good thing when we're on, we're not rushing away to dinner. Like, that is our time dedicated to you and whoever comes through the door. Like, that's all we're doing. You know, you have our complete attention. We don't have to worry about anything else. And I mean, I find I like that type of work anyway.
Yeah, it's that work-life balance, and then the no pressure. You don't really have to worry that the labor. Sometimes we call it laborist over, like, I'm in California, or hospitalist, other things. But yeah, just the no pressure, I think, is really important, because I feel like sometimes the word out there is like the attendings, maybe it's a holiday, maybe it's, you know, and then all of a sudden they're doing an induction and then they give you a time limit. But I find with most hospitalists, if they're the ones that are caring for you, then it's really going to be like, as long as your baby's safe and you're safe, let's see what we can do. I'm over here. I'm in the other room. So just let me know. And that's good to know. That's one thing that I always tell my clients. If you know which hospital you're going to do, find out if they have a hospitalist, because then you're going to feel a little more comfortable. If you are feeling that pressure to say to your doctor, like, can I meet with the hospital? Like, I want to speak to the hospitalist and see, maybe you have a better vibe with him. I hate to say, like, you can fire your doctor, but if you feel pressured or coerced, or if you have experienced any obstetric violence, even, I've seen it, then if you know that there is a hospitalist and you can introduce yourself to them, then you have a little bit more confidence to be empowered to say, this isn't going to work for me. I would like a second opinion, or I would like to see the hospitalist now. And I'm just putting that out there as like a little cushion, safety cushion. Not that you are there to take the attending's jobs, but, you know, we need options as laboring women and as families. So it's just nice to know that it is a backup, right?
Absolutely. I kind of think of us as the best kept secret in our area. We have patients ask us occasionally if we have our own practice, but honestly, we don't. But they'll refer their friends, say, hey, you know, your doctor doesn't deliver at this hospital, but these are the hospitalists. Come here and deliver if you want. And I have such a strong suspicion that they're already doing that. But it's, you know, it's just, it's flattery. It says we're doing a good job. You know, if they're choosing to deliver with us, you know, and we're a small team, so odds are you're going to get one of us. And we're seeing friends and family, and all, there's a pattern. So I can't say for sure what they're doing, but there's something going on.
I would probably, but I've seen it a lot. Sometimes, you know, the plan is this specific hospital with this specific doctor, and then something happens. The doctor is on vacation, or the hospital is being, you know, not admitting them, and they don't feel heard. So then they're like, okay, I'm going to go to this other hospital. And then when they go to this hospital, their attending no longer goes to this hospital, or like I said, they're on vacation. So just to know, oh, this hospital has a hospitalist. They have a doctor that will see me. Now, if they don't have a hospitalist, sometimes they have the attendings. I know I worked at a hospital where they were all on call. So you have different practices, and each practice has a day that they are now on call. So that adds to one of the hospitalist's job, which is if it's an emergency C-section, if it's in the middle of the night, who do we call? Well, we're going to call your attending, and then we're going to let the hospitalist know, hey, we have a C-section going back. So you guys are usually the ones that are going to be assisting in surgery.
We're starting it.
Yeah, sometimes we have to start it.
I've had how many deliveries I've had where I had to call in the hospitalist to just kind of be standing in the doorway with gloves on. I'm like, I don't know where they are, but this baby's like, it's peeking out. So it's like, it's just such a nice feeling as a nurse to know that we have that like down the hall as well.
Yeah, I always have my running shoes on. Like sometimes I'm a dance co-girl, but I'm also a runner on the side. So I always have a pair of running shoes, especially for those 24-hour shifts. That's another tip. Switch your shoes out mid-shifts so your feet don't get tired.
I'll switch my underwear. It's refreshing.
It's the things you don't think about.
12-hour shifts. Like, yes. You guys change. Yeah. Okay. Change in the beginning and end.
Yes. It's like the little things that you don't think about, but when you need it, you're like, oh my gosh, if you don't have it, it can break your shift.
Oh my God. You need a little, like, well, you have lockers, I'm sure. That's so funny. Yeah. I never even think of that. So let's talk now, you know, about your opinion, because obviously my listeners, anyone that follows me knows my opinions a lot about what the system, how it's is right now, and I speak a little bit of where it's headed, but mostly where I would like it to be headed. I want your guys. You don't know how long I've been waiting to have an OB on this, and now I have two. I'm just like, oh my gosh. Please tell me your view on the current medical system for birth and laboring, and then we can discuss where we think it's going. How about that?
Okay, so I will speak very broadly because I know every situation in city and state are different. So just being as broad as possible. I think there are fewer and fewer private practice OBGYNs that are performing their services. I'm seeing less and less incidences where one doctor follows their OB patient throughout their entire pregnancy and then delivers and then sees them through menopause. And the OB hospitalist movement has been born up of these hospitals needing more emergent care because now there's not enough OBs to take call and keep the hospital staff 24/7. So then it's a safety issue because emergencies and obstetrics can happen very quickly. Like 30 minutes in obstetrics is a very long time in some situations. So the 30-minute rule to get to the hospital if you're on call doesn't necessarily apply. So this was the hospital's answers to the safety net to keep our mothers and babies safe. And I think as there's a growing need for us, I would like our patients to know who and what we are, what we do, so they're not so fearful. Because there may come a time where this is the norm. You know, we may have some providers that don't deliver at a hospital. Maybe they'll see you through obstetric care. But the norm may start to be, oh, well, you're going to see the OB hospitalist for delivery.
I think that's great for your, oh, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, with the changes and, you know, like access to healthcare is an issue for a lot of women, women's healthcare, you know, establishing prenatal care, I think it's tough for a lot of rural families, for, you know, even probably in urban areas because of, you know, the lack of support for women. So I'm very proud of advocates like this podcast so that we can get information out there. But also, you know, I think that as a OB hospitalist, we are going to see more, you know, people who maybe have had no prenatal care or access to that care, and then they show up in the hospital and, you know, need a lot of help and support, whether that be lactation, an obstetrical provider, you know, social support, all the things that go into maternity care. And I think working together as a team and strengthening each aspect is also important.
Amazing. Well, what would we say then when we're thinking about, because I feel like it's so important for women that they feel connected to their delivering provider, like whoever's going to assist at the birth, that's kind of like a huge part in the prenatal care for them is being able to become familiar with that one doctor, right? So then it was like, oh, he's going to go on vacation. But you know, and then like, okay, I'll just get induced because I want them to deliver me and be there. And taking that away, how do you think we can balance that out? I'm kind of throwing that question at you, but I'm sure it's something you probably thought about.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're meeting for the first time.
So anecdotally, because I've seen this scenario happen probably every time I'm at work, it's a sigh of relief like, so once the baby's born and the, I guess, things have calmed down a little bit, it's almost like my patients breathe a sigh of relief and they're so grateful. They're like, I was so worried my doctor wouldn't be there, but I'm so happy that you delivered my baby and the family's all smiling, you know, even if it's not a perfect delivery, you know, because things don't go as planned all the time. This is also why we're here. But I always end up seeing the smiling faces after, you know, which kind of tells me we're doing the right thing, at least. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's challenging, right, to make a connection with someone face-to-face in something that is, like, so important in their life, right? Having a baby is a very important aspect memory of your chapter book. And so I think I know that it's an important role that I have. So when I get called to a room, you know, we need you in this room. Never met this person. Hey, I'm here. Introducing yourself, right? Like, I always say who I am, my role. You know, I you know, remember they're having a baby. What's the baby's name? If it is something that's a little more traumatic, like a fetal demise or something, you know, being respectful to closing the curtain, like little tasks that we can all do better, right? Myself, the nurse at the bedside who is like the support person for this patient. And so I think, you know, it's a challenging thing that all of us need to do in healthcare. But I think with some practice and with putting yourself in patients' shoes, right? Even if you have never been in the other end of, you know, the bed, so to speak, but just saying like, hey, what's your baby's name? Or this is who I am. This is why I'm here. I'm sorry that it's a little awkward, right? I'm meeting you like this, but I'm here to keep you and your baby safe. That's my goal. Or I'm here to provide lactation support. I'm here to, you know, be your support person. Like,
and there's a lot of communication that goes on that our patients don't necessarily see. So I know Dr. Fascio and I, we work very hard at our nurse relationships. We really don't have to work hard because we generally just like each other. So it's just fun, you know, but just for other hospitalists or other shift workers, if you maintain open doors to communication with everyone on the team, you can actually learn things about a certain patient and figure out how to make the care run more smoothly. So, like, you know, in the event of a demise, I may not be in that room 24/7. The patient needs to rest. She needs some alone time with her family, or she just needs some quiet time. The nurse is the one who goes in there for vitals, so she's going to go in there more than me, but I'm going to rely on that nurse to tell me, how is she doing mentally? How is she feeling? Are there any social or family relationships that I need to pick up on so I can better direct care? All those conversations happen, at least when I'm, you know, when we're on.
Yeah.
Because we need to sniff things out. We don't want to know only what's going on with the patient from a medical standpoint, but we need to know all the aspects so we can just help direct her care.
Amazing. So I think it's communication then, what I'm getting, and building quick trust with the team, and educating yourself on what a hospitalist is, if your hospital has one, if they do, who are they? Like, maybe you can, you know, when you first arrive, whether you know your attending is going to be there or not, ask your nurse, is the hospitalist available? Just, can I say hi? And then share who you are with them and open up that line of communication so that if the event comes where you see them again, and maybe your attending didn't make it, or it becomes an emergency and now they're the ones assisting or even performing like lead surgeon in an C-section, then it's not going to feel so overwhelming. You guys should put a video on your website or on the hospital website, like get to know your hospitalist, just to like, because I feel like once you get to, maybe you did, I don't know. But once you get to know someone, you see their faces, even before you ever get to the hospital, it's like, okay, I can breathe. Oh, it's not like the unknowns of birth. Yeah, there's so many that, why are you guys?
Like, we need to make a video, and I'm already picturing, like, I need to find a good editor, and we're going to get our hair done, and the wheels like don't stop turning.
I know.
Meet your OB hospitalist.
If I'm pregnant and I'm like, okay, I'm going to this, I just listened to this episode and I was like, okay, there's a hospitalist. I'm going to go to that hospital's website first thing and then go to the, okay, maternity or whatever. And then me or hospitalist, hello, I would be so happy. I'd be like,
that is smart. Cool. Yeah. If you own a hospital, y'all should listen and y'all should do that.
I'm a smart cat.
Especially if they're good.
Yes.
If they're as friendly and welcoming as you two, I would be flapping on the homepage.
Maybe we're just the oddballs. I don't know.
Yeah.
We work with good people.
We love our job. But we've had administrators say, your patients love you guys. I'm like, well, you know, part of it's the energy you project. I would never say I've had a bad patient. Like, I always get so pumped when I think about my patients. And we've been doing our job long enough to where we see patients come back with their second and third and fourth pregnancies. And they're like, oh my God, you delivered my other one, you know? And it's just so rewarding.
And there's all those memes now, like, you look happier. And I do feel that patients feel our vibe, our energy, mm-hmm. because I do love this work. Like, maybe when I was doing office and, like, you know, full spectrum OBGYN, I probably wasn't as happy, and maybe I was coming off as, like, you know, suffering in my job or something, but I think it also is a vibe. So mm-hmm. we love what we do.
Vibe. It's like, are you just trying to get through the day, get through this patient, get this, you know, get home after this birth? Are you thinking about other things?
Because patients are smart. They'll read your face. Mm-hmm. Like, they're smart.
Yeah. It's just like, I have like 17 years waitressing experience and I was a single mom. So this was like my income. So I needed to make money. So I mm-hmm. improved how I approached each table. I was able to quickly read the table, read everyone there, and be able to adjust my level of either excitement or my jokes or, you know, humor, mm-hmm. or just like, oh, they want me to be a stealth waitress, like not talk. So, you know, you quickly have to pick up these cues if you want to get a better tip, if you want to make more money. So I got really mm-hmm. good at that. And then I went to nursing school and now I'm a nurse. And guess what? I'm entering each room with a whole different family, a whole different dynamic, personalities, cultures, histories, experience, and I need to be quickly reading that room just like you guys and adjust. And the better you are at doing that, because it's about them, not you. It's not about me. It's about their experience. So how can I adjust to fit into their experience? Do they look scared and maybe they need a little bit more coaching or education, my presence, a little joke, lighten the mood. I'll quickly like, oh, they're just sitting. So many times I walk in and they're sitting there so proper, staring at the wall. I'm like, do you want a TV or just the lights? Or like sometimes they need a little bit of push because they're like, holy smokes, what? I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm so nervous, but also excited, but also all the feels. And I just need some direction. So I have to learn quickly, like, how much direction do they need? And sometimes it's mm-hmm. literally walking them over to like, this is the light switch. And then here's the shades. And let's make that, what environment do you feel comfortable in, and start getting them to talk. And so these are just skills that I've picked up as the nurse. And I don't think it's that different from a hospitalist. Like the, like even from what you're saying, like the skills mm-hmm. that you have to pick up is to walk in, be able to communicate with them in a way that puts them at immediate ease in probably stressful situation, to feel not only comfortable with you, but a certain level of trust, right? And then, so then the patients and doulas as well need to understand that, because maybe the doulas and patients have had some of that time to get to know each other and even a bit with their attending or their doctors. But that's what I do a lot of coaching in, is with patients on how to build their communication skills, because it's a two-way street, right? You're not always going to get the doctors like you or the nurses like me. So then how can you kind of facilitate this conversation with them to be able to build that trust? So you guys get to know.
I've even had doulas step out the room to talk to me before. And that kind of helps with a plan of care, just because they have known the patient longer. Some doulas that we get, I I think they're afraid to talk to me initially. But once they come to the hospital enough and we establish a rapport, if they've come with enough patients, and then they start recognizing me like, oh, she's here every day, you know, and then we can establish some rapport. Because, you know, one of my jobs is, if we're having a vaginal birth, you know, if we could do things in partnership, keep the lines of communication open. And my job is, if something becomes unsafe, then I can give my input. But yeah, we talk to doulas, midwives, and then obviously the nurses, like we spoke about.
Amazing. And so with the midwives and doulas, then you're just kind of as a their backup there, and
yeah,
just assessing and just kind of answering questions. So mm-hmm. Like, what a valuable team that they have when they come in with a doula and with maybe a midwife or even an attending, and they know that they have a backup there to support them. So,
yeah.
So let's talk then a little bit up then moving forward. What are your hopes for the future of birth in the hospital? Maybe this program, are you on board with this type of scenario being the common structure?
I think it could get there, but there's a lot of work to be done. A lot of work. I have read some papers on this very subject, and what keeps being touted as roadblocks just to success would be communication. Like, maybe physician and midwife don't communicate well, they're not working with each other enough to establish that sort of rapport. But I think with practice, surely it can be taught and it can be done, because we're all in the same business. We all want the patient to have a safe, healthy delivery, however it has to be done, just as long as it's safe. And we all have the same goal at the end. So if we can work together and perfect that, and I'm talking about the United States as a whole, then we can deliver better health care, because our maternal mortality and morbidity isn't that great if you've looked at the data. And I think we could do a lot better. And we have a growing high-risk population, and collaboration of care with multiple people is almost necessary at this point.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. It's collaboration, communication, and a constant like a mind to continue learning and to appreciate change, which is kind of hard for a lot of people, especially if they've been attending or practicing for 20, 30 years. It's like, keep an open mind that things are changing. Social media is taking patients to a whole nother level of understanding of what their options are. Maybe they're not always correct, but a lot of the times they're getting some information out there that maybe it's not clear. Or maybe it's very clear and it's not clear to the attendings or the doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just keep an open
mind. That's
what
I was going to say.
Yeah. Tell me.
Yeah. It's like technology, times are changing so quickly. You know, patients are now being educated, empowered through social media platforms. You know, there's a lot of resources, information to empower yourself. And so I just think that we all need to be adapting the hospital system, the healthcare system, the physicians, surgeons, the nurses, everyone on the team. There's no I in team, but, you know, we can't just let one person have their, you know, goals, whether that be like the administration or goals of healthcare versus like the actual patient center goals. So I think hopefully things will get better and strengthened through small grassroots movements like this. But, you know, we're all trying to be part of the change. That's why we're here today.
Yep.
And that's why I do it. I was like, look, I'm just one person. I know so many people that are doing the same thing. And I love that. It's like this collective voice. It's like this little army, not only of, you know, nurses or doulas or midwives and doctors, but of women and people. And just realizing, like, we have to continue. I love that you use the word adapt, because that's what we do as humans. Throughout time, to survive, we have to adapt. And then learning, like, nothing's perfect. So how can we continue to improve, and what are we trying to improve, and at what cost? And understanding that everyone's going to come with their own histories and experiences, and they're individuals. So communicating and learning who they are is is going and who they need to learn who they are as well, like in their values. Cause sometimes they don't know until after it's all done. They're like, wait a minute, that I didn't like that at all. What happened there? And I was like, oh, we should have talked about it way sooner. So
yeah. Cause some women don't even know their options until it's after, you know, you're like, well, maybe for next time I'll do it differently.
Most of my clients are second time moms because they're like, oh, I just wasn't told. And because, you know, you're seeing them, it's like you go in, you have, it's like the car's broken or the car needs maintenance and they're there to see you. It's not like they're going in and seeing you regularly. So when you see them, it's like, okay, it's showtime. Mm-hmm. And whether maybe they're there and the goal is to not give birth, right? They're coming in and they're 28 weeks and maybe they ruptured and we're just like, we just want to keep you pregnant as long as possible and continue assessing. Something's happening. So, you know, or you're going in and you're about to give birth and now it's like, hi, I'm going to be the one helping you. So it's, you know, it's adapting and it's learning and I think we have to continue talking about it. And I love what you guys do so much. And I'm so happy to have you here to talk about it.
We like it too.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. I was so excited when you reached out. I was like, you know, I was thinking about doing some podcasts, but then Colette just reached out to me. So let's try it.
Yes. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to be your ultimate promoter. Like I have so many podcasts for you to go on. I'm about to like,
but I think because of what you do and what we do, it's like a bridge.
Yes.
You know, and like if we can make things work, we can show others how to make things work because we have the ability to broadcast our knowledge. With time, it will reach the right ears. And who knows, maybe this will be the start of more mass change, which I think that's what needs to happen.
Yeah. And I feel it. I feel like it's changing. Like now that I've really melted into the birth worker world, I'm like, holy smokes. I'm like talking to people from the UK, from Scotland, from Australia, from India, from Canada, South America. I'm just like, where is everybody? They're there, right? That's why it's grassroots, because the roots were building a foundation and it just grows and grows and grows as more people come in. And that's what I told, like, I had worked for a very conservative hospital and I told them, like, you guys, women, I mean, just in the little time I was there, the patients that I had were so informed, so educated. They were coming in with their preferences, how they wanted to push, how they wanted to be monitored, you know. Before I let you go, that just brought a question to mind. We have a lot of women now coming in with these birth plans. Maybe they don't want an IV. Maybe they don't want Pitocin. They're very fearful of Pitocin. Maybe, you know, they just want the most natural physiological birth as possible. No cervical exams. Like, can we just broach this subject? Can we just touch on it? How do you, as obstetricians, feel about those types of families and women?
Okay, so my job is to keep women and their babies safe. Any mom I have ever asked when she presents her birth plan is on the same page with me. So I've done a delivery where maybe they had IV access, but don't have to be hooked up to the IV. Because the thing is, during an emergency that could be catastrophic, at that point, it could be hard to establish an IV, because an IV is potentially your lifeline if we were dealing with a life or death situation, because stuff like that does happen in the hospital. So I just request IV access. We can limit cervical checks. As long as the baby looks happy on the monitor, the mom's vital signs are fine, we can touch and go. And I do kind of set expectations too, like, you know, if baby starts to look unhappy and I need to reassess, or if I'm concerned that your baby is starting to look stressed or in distress, then we need to be able to have that conversation. We may need to make modifications to your birth plan. But I also say, I cannot predict the future. I don't know which way this is going to go. So I am touching and going along with you. And we just continue collaboration like that. And I mean, knock on wood, but I've never really had any problems with my patients just kind of doing that. It just never really has been a, I guess, an issue.
For me, you know, I practice medicine in a shared decision making always, right? Like patients need to have informed consent and I need to bring the information. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, you can give birth without an IV, but that one time that we don't have IV access and you have to cut down to the veins. And if you've ever seen it, it's really scary. And in an emergency, you just don't want to be that one out of a million, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it all is how you make that shared decision-making with your provider, with your physician, with your obstetrician. So for me, it's shared decision-making. And I think, you know, I've had a patient recently. I want to deliver on all fours. Dr. X won't let her. Well, Dr. Fascia's here and I'm open to it. I'm going to adapt. I will, you know, I've done it a plenty of times now, but you know, the first time it's like, that's not how we were trained, but what's wrong with that? I mean, you know, birth is something that it should be empowering for women. You know, obviously my job is to keep mom and baby safe, right? If I recommend a C-section, it's very much so to keep everyone safe, mostly the baby. And so, you know, it's definitely something that I'm not trying to do. I'm not trying to, you know, cause harm in any way. You know, C-sections are risky, but it's truly, you know, and it's also understanding the patient, right? I practiced with a lot of patients from Somalia where I used to work. And, you know, a lot of them center a C-section around, you know, bad outcomes because there's no antibiotics, there's no blood in their country. And so when they come to our country, it's a really scary thing to hear that you need a C-section, but understanding the why I think is important, right? Culturally, that's something that people can't understand. Maybe, you know, they just had a certain plan for birth and, you know, it's not going to plan, but, you know, making that decision together, you know, do you need to have an IV? I mean, I think it's less risky. It's better. Do you, you know, want to deliver on all fours? Let's try it. Look, if the baby's suffering any way, can we try something different? You know, the plan is yours ultimately, but I'm here to support that plan. But truly, I have to tell you the risks and the benefits in my experience, because it all comes down to your clinical background, training, and experience. And so I think most of us have been doing this long enough that, you know, like I said, we're here to support. And also, we have 2 patients, sometimes more, sometimes 3, twins and multiples. But, you know, I think just making sure we all are on the same page. Like, and if I have to ask again, like, do you understand what I told you? Because sometimes there is a language barrier. So keeping that kind of stuff in mind as well. But it's about patient autonomy always. We took a Hippocratic oath and I truly try to live by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish more doctors were like you. Unfortunately, it's that shared decision making that's so important, and able to do that, they really need the information. So they really need to understand why you feel it's important, what the risks of doing it are, what the risks of not doing it are, which is usually what they lead with, because you need to do this because of this. And then sometimes the conversation ends there. And if they say no, because they had a birth class and they have a plan, and, you know, then we really have to find out, well, why not? Right. And where are they coming from? Is it a cultural or lack of education, or it's just their history, or maybe they really feel like I'm totally, like for the IV, like, for example, I'm so fearful of needles. It's going to stress me out having it and looking at it. I want a natural birth. I'm low risk. I don't, you know, I am confident that if something happens, you guys will catch it and we'll put an IV, but I just do not want an IV because just looking at it gives me the heebie-jeebies, right? Us as providers, we've done the education. We, you know, a part of that shared decision-making is when they don't say no. And we're like, okay, then, you know, as a nurse, I'm going to have the IV set ready. Boom, right there. You know, I'm going to keep a close eye on, how does she look? Does she still have the color in her face? Or is the baby doing okay? As soon as things maybe start going from low risk, natural, everything's cool, hands off, and now things are happening, we can bring up the discussion again, right? Nothing in birth is constant. And that's what they can understand. Like as patients, maybe they can say no. And to feel supported in those decisions is so empowering for them to be like, okay, oh my gosh. Like when they're, I'm like, yeah, no problem. This is why I wanted to put an IV. This is why it's a policy, but it's your body. So if you really, and I understand why you're saying no. So I'm going to put that you're declining at this time. But like we said, we have to learn how to adapt and things change, especially in labor and birth. So as long as we're continuing to communicate and they're always open to the idea, you know, then that's where things will go right because, okay, well, things are getting a little more high risk. We don't have to put any fluids, but what are your thoughts on maybe approaching the IV conversation again? Mm-hmm. I've had so much success that way. And they feel listened to. They feel like that they trust what I'm telling them. So this goes as the nurse and I'm sure as the doctors, if they're seeing them in prenatal, you know, be like, okay, well, I hear what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. And that line goes both ways, right? The patient is like, I hear what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. This is where I'm coming from. And mm-hmm. get that shared.
In the middle.
Yeah. And then find mm-hmm. some type of compromise for the well-being, not only of the baby and the mom, but of her mentally and the OB to make sure that they feel, and the midwife to make sure that they feel that they've done their job and that their patients are making decisions, the best decisions they can for themselves, whether they agree or not. It's always like the nurses and doctors, they got how many times I've heard, yeah, I said no to something and then they got so mad at me. And then they came in and they brought their chargers or they brought, I've heard someone bring security in to threaten them. Like, you have to do this. Why aren't you doing this? And it's like, wow. And then I've had so many times the doctors are like, Colette, go in there. They're not, you know, listening. They're not doing what I'm asking them. You go in and talk to them. I'm like, okay. I'm like, because I have success, and the quote success, getting them to do what the doctor wants. And that's all in quotes. But I'm really not. I'm just going in and be like, let's have a conversation. Let's talk.
Right. They just, spending and there was the time.
There was a missing piece of information that maybe they had, or, you know, or I come back out and be like, hey, they don't want it. And this is why. And I'll put it in. It's like, I'm a translator. And I'm like, and this is why, but they're open to discussing it in a couple of hours. Does that work for you? Yeah, that's fine. That's cool. You know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. it's just like, we got to facilitate this communication. It's really important.
So. Yes, yes. And those types of scenarios happen fairly often, I would say.
Yeah. So if they're feeling like they're not being, if you're pregnant, if you are going in for labor and you just feel like it's their way or the highway and you're not feeling heard, then maybe ask for a charge nurse or someone that can help clarify things. That's why I always say bring in a doula. If the doula has that experience, then maybe they can help translate, you know, what's missing or take some, you can always ask for a little time and then, you know, call a friend. That's why my friend's a nurse, because you can call me and then maybe I can help, you know, understand. I am not here to convince anyone of anything. I am not here to pressure mm-hmm. you, or I'm just here to present the recommendations and the safest options by the medical experts. And then, you know, where are you at? And why are you, what is your thought process? And why are you not thinking it? And so many times I'm like, okay, I had one patient that she came into Santa Monica and she's just like, don't touch me. Just don't touch me. And guess what? We didn't touch her. She let me take IV because we didn't even have our prenatals. So I was able to pull the labs, but no one else, not even the doctor, not even to check. Like he kind of helped guide the baby out. And then she's like, don't even look if I tore. And so we didn't do anything. Everything turned out okay. But that for the staff was a very nerve-wracking, scary situation because of all the unknowns. But I went back to, I'm very confident in the skills that I can give. And then I am confident in the patient autonomy. And so I have to support that at the end of the day. So I love that you brought up autonomy being so important and communication, adapting and being a team. I think you guys have I mean, you guys pointed out.
And don't be so hard on your like OB attendings, because they're probably just tired and burnt out and grumpy and they should just switch to OB hospitals. Like,
yeah,
just the OB hospitals.
That being said, maybe what tips would you give for maybe younger OBs or medical students thinking about OB? And how would you present this in, you know, maybe this could be our leading note, like our closing note. How would you present this to maybe newer doctors that are still being trained in a certain way? And this is how you do it. I think this has probably already opened their eyes, but then how would you kind of put on a platter the OB hospitalist program for them?
Yes. So I would say definitely consider your practice environment. Do you enjoy being in the clinic, which is more slow paced, or hospital work is more fast paced? Things move a little bit faster. It's a little more action packed than an office setting. And do you like to talk to people? Because we're in the hospital and I feel like we don't stop talking, but that's just kind of what we like to do. And so if you like being in the operating room, because that is a part of what we do, do you like being the front line for a patient, being there for the initial triage assessment, deciding if they can go home or if they needed to be admitted? Do you like collaborating care with other specialists, working with nurses one-on-one, which may come with more experience too? Because I feel like in training, you're exposed to the hospital and nurses on certain rotations. It's not like it's every single day of the year. So that is one thing you will have to weed out. But it is a very rewarding field, and there's never one day that's the same as the other.
And I just think for those who are adrenaline junkies and, you know, you really chose this career or thinking about a medicine career and surgical career, you know, I think being an OB hospitalist, you are getting that rush of adrenaline a lot more than my ER colleagues, I would say. And so, you know, I think that's the beauty of obstetrics and gynecology and women's health, that you can kind of create whatever lane or path you decide. I mean, there's so many subspecialties that you can go on from this training, but also, you know, you can have the work-life balance that you deserve, because we're human, right? We're not just a doctor is not my only title. You know, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter. There are other things I like to do with my time, and I feel like my patients deserve the best doctor. Mm-hmm. And so I'm able to be that as an OB hospitalist.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I mean, where can we find you? I mean, thank you so much for coming. Let us know where we can find you guys.
Well, we're in South Louisiana.
Oh, I thought we were just going to say like the OB hospital.
The OB hospital. Yeah,
we'll edit that out. I was like, I kind of want people to know exactly where we are. But
yeah, we can't. I don't think we can say our hospital.
Oh, guys, they're coming to your hospital. They're like,
we're getting all these people from California and Nevada. All these people are calling.
They're all coming. Who's your OB? Oh, this guy in Tarzana. You're like, what? Tarzana, California? Yeah, we Dodger heard her on the first
week. Can you work every day?
Fill in our work schedule.
So what's funny about me, I will take people literally. And like when I'm in the hospital, like nurses sometimes have to like interpret. They say, no, 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 that's not what she's asking. This is what she means. I'm like, what? Oh, okay, okay.
Where can we find you? Well, I'm at home right now.
It usually makes the patients laugh.
I love
it's usually
it.
An icebreaker.
That's
see,
okay.
We're goofs. Like, you know, we're still kind of goofy.
You guys are great. Yeah. I love that. It's
I know. I'm like,
it's relatable, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. It was good. This was a really good discussion.
Yes, it was. So we can find you at the OB Hospitalist on Instagram. Are you guys on Facebook or anywhere else?
Right now, just Instagram and TikTok.
Yes.
Which we're working on.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to TikTok yet, because I have to wait till the new iPhone comes out, because mine has glitched so bad since I tried to update it. So I am just dealing with some annoying issues for the next 2 months until the iPhone 17 comes out.
Okay, no TikTok for 2 months, and then
we cannot respond to TikTok for 2 months.
But find them on Instagram or at their hospital.
Yes, that works.
Amazing. Oh, cool. So I will end there. You guys, what a great discussion. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to have you back, because there's a lot there's a lot of topics we can talk about. And there's a lot of questions I have sometimes for doctors. And some of them.
I think there's so many.
Yeah. Yeah, so many. So we'll touch on things. This is a platform for you guys if you ever want to come on and talk about something specific.
This is awesome.
You know, I don't shy away from anything, whether it's politics or, you know, whatever. So thank you so much. I will be managing your podcast interviews while I get you on more because you did.
Yeah. Yes. Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of the day.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to My Friends and Nurse presents the Birthling Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.